There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to talk to you about Superdraft. Great way to play daily fantasy sports. Unlike the others, you play who you want because there's no pricing. It's that simple. It's a multiplier format points system. The riskier the play, the more points you can potentially earn if they produce. Tons and tons of fun. They just introduced basketball to the pool. They have hockey, golf, baseball, football, the works. Tons and tons of fun. When you create your account, use promo code Bubba to show you created your account by listening to Bench with Bubba. And you can play all the free contests you want. When you want to play some cash money, make your first deposit. Get a free $10 deposit bonus. Thanks to that promo code Bubba you used when you made that first user ID. All right, everybody. So go check that out. Superdraft in your app store, superdraft.io. Also, if you get a rating and review on iTunes, I'd much appreciate it. It would help the podcast out a ton and mean a lot to me. So if you could do that, a couple minutes would be awesome. Okay, welcome, Bubba, Batflip, episode 11, recapping 5 pitchers we each got wrong and just some good chatter on their pitcher position as a whole. Back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Batflip, episode 11. Gonna have a fun one tonight. We recapped our 10 hitters we missed on last year, and obviously there's always more than 10. We're gonna do some pitching. We're gonna go 5 each, a lot of similar players here, because pitching, like Toby and I were kind of talking about beforehand, it can be very different than the hitters landscape of things, and we don't need to go super deep on pitching. But again, I just mentioned him in order to break it all down. My co-host on this endeavor, find him on Twitter at Batflip Crazy. Toby, how we doing, man?
We are doing well, Bubba. Thanks. Spent this past weekend at First Pitch Arizona, which was a blast. Getting to meet a lot of folks I know from Twitter. It was funny. Like, I'd be in line and I'd hear somebody talking and I'd recognize their voice from a podcast I listened to or something like that, and introduce myself. But a lot of fun, a lot of really interesting conversations about kind of the fantasy baseball landscape in general. Definitely got me fired up moving forward for 2020. So I'm doing really well. I hope you're able to come out one of these days, Bubba, because I think you would have an absolute blast.
Yeah, no, I'd love to make it out there one year. Hopefully scheduling allows it to happen next year. We'll see how that goes. I wish they do the PDFs like I talked about. There's a couple of the little deals you were at that I really wanted to hear. One, I'm pretty sure you guys talked about or you listened to, about the new bouncy ball and how it affects, exit velo and all that stuff, because I was doing some research on some rankings for next year and I wanted to know if these guys were lucky or what it was and how I should, are they getting the playoff ball? What are we doing here? So I was trying to get answers for that. And I would have loved to have known what was talked about at that, but it looked like a great time. And from everybody I saw, it had a blast. So that's good to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was interesting, the conversations around the ball, because I feel like more and more data is coming out and that's going to have such a big impact on the fantasy landscape overall. There were some really interesting discussions there, but the more data comes out, like just, you know, and the more we watch the games, the ball is definitely, definitely different. And it's extremely so. Like it's back to 2016, according to Rob Arthur, who is always very accurate on the subject. So I'm really interested to see what happens. I kind of think more and more that, you know, we're going to end up with a ball that's kind of like the 2018 ball from last year, where there was about, I think it was a 12.7% home run per fly ball rate. This year we're up to like over 15%. I think that's much more what we're going to get, because I think, you know, watching the games now, like obviously the pitching battles are awesome, but offense drives, I think, a lot of fan engagement and interest. And I think they're going to want it a little bit more juice than it is currently.
Oh yeah. They made commercials back in the early 90s with Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and Tom Glavine saying chicks dig the long ball. So it's what that drives the market. Like, as baseball fans, I am loving like the Strasburg Bueller battles and stuff. I was all for like 1-0 ball games, but I get it when the ball's not leaving the yard or they're not like 6-3 games or something. It can be tough for the not so like diehard fan. I totally understand that. When you were listening to the baseball talk that they were doing, talking about, did they say, cause maybe you can answer my question since you were there, with this bouncy ball this year, and we look at like exit velocity and barrel rates or hard hit rates or anything, was there any way to factor in bouncy ball, or should, like, do we expect it to be extra like fast off the bat, or what kind of stuff were they talking about? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Some guys took massive jumps in their hard hit rate, and I want to know if I should credit it to what I should credit it to, basically.
Yeah, that's a really good question. There was not any discussion specifically about that. I mean, I believe there was some mention that average exit velocity was up, barrel rates were obviously up. How much of that is a factor of the ball or not, I'm not sure. But what I will do really quickly right here is just, I can look at average exit velocity over the last 3 years just to see across the league what it was at. I'm assuming, you know, that it is faster with the reduced drag. But I'm not sure.
It would make sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much that impacts like ground balls versus fly balls. Obviously, you know, fly balls are going further. There was a great tweet yesterday. I want to credit the right person. I can't remember who it was. It might be Devin Fink, who's a writer for Fangraphs, but he essentially said that Carlos Correa fly ball to dead center in Houston on average, you know, there was like 100 balls that were hit similarly this year. And it was and they went 409 feet on average. And then this one, I think went like 396 or something like that. So that just gives you a sense, like it doesn't seem like, you know, changing the ball would make that much of an impact, but it certainly does. So yeah, average exit velocity was up 0.4 miles per hour just overall. You know, and so if I can look for at fly balls as well.
All right. Yeah. The reason why it kind of perked my interest is I was starting my catcher's rankings, and you know, you get to certain guys like Roberto Perez that crushes it or had a big year this year. And looking at the first pitch conference where barrel rates and exit velocity, like average around baseball, wasn't super high, but you look at guys like Roberto Perez and it was super high. And I'm trying to decide, do I credit that to the bouncy ball, or was there a better approach at the plate for him? How do I factor that in? Like, I'm assuming the bouncy ball had something to do with, I know it's home runs for sure, but maybe he created a better swing path, or he did something differently that aided in it as well. And it's hard to, I'm wondering if I can factor any baseball related factors into that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm looking up now just on fly balls, average exit velocity was also up 0.4 miles per hour. So I think it's just the fact that the ball goes so much further when you even hit it the same, you know, and so that I think is probably what is going on. And I think you also have folks hitting at higher launch angles as well. So you know, I think there's a couple things, but yeah, certainly the ball has been a huge, huge influence on fantasy baseball this year with some of the numbers that we saw across the league.
No doubt about it. We'll talk about more fun stuff like that throughout the off season, but let's get to it. Five pitchers each that we missed on this season. And like we said at the beginning, I believe we share three of them. So that'll make it an interesting conversation topic to discuss that. And we'll start with the first one. We share the same one. I'll go after you, but what did you miss on Shane Bieber?
Yeah, you know, I think people listening to the last couple pods are going to think that we're masochists. I mean, just going back and, you know, accountability is obviously really important, but it's kind of painful to go back and kind of look at some of the guys we missed on for good or bad reasons. I could have really used Shane Bieber in a couple of leagues, for sure. But I think with Bieber, you know, there were some dramatic changes in what he was able to do between 2018 and 2019. I think the key things for me, you know, for Bieber is, number one, his curveball was much better. It really was a huge weapon for him this year. I think that's part of it. And I think a pitch mix change was also really key for Bieber. I think he made a lot of the adjustments that were necessary to kind of hide some of the flaws that I saw. For folks who follow me on Twitter or who saw any discussion around Bieber that I had, I was really concerned that his fastball was just so bad. Like, you know, it just got crushed last year. You know, between him and Nick Pivetta, those were two guys that I was kind of off of. Pivetta much more. He made my bold predictions. Bieber, I didn't mind as much, but I didn't own any of him in 14 leagues. So that gives you a sense of kind of where I was on him compared to where some other folks were on him. But he did every single thing that you would want to see from a pitcher to make himself better and to hide those flaws. So I mentioned the change in the pitch mix. Last year, 57% of his pitches were fastballs, which is a really bad pitch. This year, 46% of his pitches were fastballs. So he threw 11% fewer fastballs, and then he increased his slider usage. We know how great his slider is, by 4%. And then he increased his curveball usage by 5%. And the curveball really grew by leaps and bounds. It actually ended up in a lot of instances being a better pitch than his slider is. I mean, we know how good his slider is, but you know, his slider this year had a 41% O swing. His curveball had a 46% O swing. His slider had a 79% in zone contact rate. His curveball had an 82% in zone contact rate. Swinging strike rate, curveball 24%, slider 23%. And so you can, and WRC plus 63 for the curve and 58 for the slider. So very, very similar pitches, but he's got two of them. And I think that just makes him so much more of a dominant pitcher compared to 2018, when that swinging strike rate on his curveball was only 14.5%. So almost a 10% increase in his swinging strike rate on that curveball, which is just a huge, huge change in his arsenal. And the fact that he threw it a lot more and his worst pitch better turned him into just an absolutely fantastic pitcher this year. There were some contact concerns. Those continued. 1.3 home runs per nine this year compared to 1.02 last year. But when you look at all of the peripheral numbers, they were all really good. He also stopped throwing the ball over the plate so much. His zone percentage went down 8% from 48% last year to 40% this year. And so really you see a guy who, like, every single thing that was wrong with him last year, right? He was around the plate too much. His fastball sucked. You know, he didn't really, like, he had a good third pitch, but he didn't really have a great third pitch. Now he has a great third pitch. He's throwing the ball around the strike zone less. He's getting more swings outside the zone by 4% this year. His swinging strike rate's up 3%. And his CSW is at 33.1% for the year. Which is really, really, really good. So, again, I had my concerns heading into this year, and what he essentially did was address every single one of those concerns with the way that he pitched. And the last thing I'll say is I should have just known that there's so many Indians pitchers that absolutely that have terrible fastballs, right? Like Kluber's is all right, but like Carrasco, Bowers hasn't been that great in the past, but they've been able to use that, those secondary pitches, those breaking pitches, those off-speed pitches to really become fantastic pitchers. And I think Beaver's another example of us seeing Cleveland's pitcher development in action. How about you? What were some of the things that you feel like, you know, you missed on Beaver?
Well, the only one of them, I was not a fan of. He was much more, it felt like pitch to contact last year, and that fastball was very hittable. And he threw it, like you said, almost 12% more of the time last year than this year. And the slider usage, curveball usage, even the changeup usage, all increasing, was tremendous because, as we've seen throughout baseball, like Eno Saris tweeted it out tonight, where Strasburg is the first year he's thrown 30% curveballs. In the postseason, he's throwing 40% curveballs. Mm. And look how dominating Strasburg's been this year. When these guys start utilizing that slider and that curveball so much more, it is tremendously effective. And that's something he hadn't been doing much of. And it just seemed like he was always around the plate, always kind of serving up meatballs. I believe it was Nick Pollock in the offseason last year going into the draft season was kind of talking. He might have been one of the big guys on Beaver. There's a lot of guys on Beaver coming into the season. He was with the Pavettas and the Eduardo Rodriguez and all those guys in that range that people wanted. And it seemed like Beaver was one of those guys who just kind of – he was more of a pitch-to-contact guy. It wasn't like super dominant. You know, 9.26 K per nine last year, almost 11 K per nine this year. Much more of a pitcher and just, you know, getting the job done overall. Like the BABIP got to him last year, much better this year. Ground ball rate's about the same, but he was doing the little things better. And a lot of it's just that strikeout rate, which is tremendous. The increase in home runs, I just factor to the bouncy ball. It's such a minute number on the grand scheme of things. But for me, it was way too much pitch to contact. I'm a guy, this will be a trend you'll see in this episode and in other pitching episodes that we ever do, is I want strikeout guys. And Beaver was not a strikeout guy for me as of last year, because even in the minors, he pitched 114 innings in the big last year. In the minors, he never had he only one time in 2017 in single A had over 9K per nine, over a K per inning essentially. And that just scares me way too much as you get to the better caliber hitters that any professional hitter can hit a fastball. So if you're throwing a lot of fastballs and you're not effective with it, they're all going to hit you. So the fact he wasn't striking guys out terrified me, and it got me off of him in a big way. Obviously, I was wrong, and he was outstanding. That 33% CSW, he was one of the top players on the Razzball Player Rater. When you slide on down that one, it'll be a lot quicker to do this. But he finished very well there as well. He was the sixth pitcher in terms of 15 team leagues in pitchers value. He averaged $23.50 per pitcher, so he was outstanding. I was very, very wrong. Where he went for ADP, you got insane value. So yeah, Beaver was a guy I missed in a big way. Definitely. Who was your second pitcher?
I'm a little sad too that I didn't do this analysis before my draft this weekend at First Pitch Arizona, because I went Scherzer, Buehler around the turn in the 1-2, and I kind of might be more into Bieber than Buehler next year, really? Just based on like taking this analysis. Well, I think when you factor in, you know, like the BABIP and the left on base percentage were all pretty regular for Bieber this year. He gave up 1.3 home runs, and he was still able to do what he did. If the ball does get better for pitchers, at least, like if they do deaden the ball a little bit, I mean, we could really be looking at a guy who is just absolutely dominant. And I love Buehler, but as I dive in more and more, like some of the skills just aren't at the caliber of an ace yet. Like he's definitely got the velocity and the fastball, which I think he uses to reduce the quality of contact, which is certainly important. But I don't know if he has the same K upside as a guy like Bieber, at least right now. But
yeah, no, you could be right. I think what we saw from Buehler this year really showed a lot to me. But then again, so did Bieber. So it's tough to just to pinpoint it like that. I think you can't go wrong with either. I think Buehler can take the next step. I think he is gonna be an ace, but I haven't looked at the numbers that closely yet. So it's like flipping a coin right now. I can't blame you either way on that one. Who's your number two?
So my number two is somebody that that folks who follow me will know well, and that is Joe Musgrove. I was incredibly high on Musgrove heading into this year. I drafted him. I believe I had him in 9 of my 14 leagues this year. And so, as you can imagine, it was certainly a disappointing year from my perspective for Musgrove. I mean, he wasn't atrocious. 4.4 ERA, 1.22 WHIP, 157 Ks in 170 innings. There was some good. There was some positive increase in swinging strike rate, increase in K minus walk rate, and the repertoire is still really, really nice. But heading into this year, what I saw was a guy who, towards the end of last year, the skills really shot up. He's got a terrific repertoire. I mean, his fastball is really where he needs to improve. But he's got a great slider. He's got a great changeup. They're both really good pitches from pretty much any metric you can look at, from O swing, swinging strike rate, how hitters do in terms of WRC plus, and consistently so over the last 2 years. And so that's what I was really looking at in Musgrove. I think what I missed was, number one, I don't think I factored in the injury enough. He did have off-season abdominal surgery. And so when, he's one of those guys, there's a bunch of guys who didn't have a full spring training, including Bueller. And while Musgrove didn't struggle right out the gate, he certainly had a massive period of struggle after a few weeks or after about a month into the season. And so his velo was down. His velo was down all the way down to like 91, 92 earlier on in the season. And he really just was not as effective of a pitcher. And he was prone to these huge blowups. I think every time he played the Cardinals, he gave up like 8 earned runs in 2 innings or something like that. There was a ton of variance in the performance, a bunch of really good outings and then a bunch of really awful outings. And I think because of that, myself included, like either moved on from Musgrove before he did really well towards the end of the season, or just was afraid to start him in some of those good starts because of how badly we had been burned. But the skills still tell the tale of a better than league average pitcher. This year he had a 12% swinging strike rate, which is better than league average for starters. He still has great control, 66% first pitch strike rate. He's in the zone a bunch. He gets people to chase a bunch. Walk rate at 5.4% this year. He's not able to dominate in the zone, which I think is one of his weaknesses, and for that reason he gives up a lot of contact when he's in the zone, so his K rate is not what you would expect it to be based on his swinging strike rate, but still a 28.8% CSW, so right around league average. And I think it was just kind of painful owning Musgrove in a lot of places this year, but I am still in on Musgrove. I'm going to own him a bunch. I drafted him around pick 200 in the 15-team draft and hold that I did this weekend at First Pitch Arizona. And the reason why is that his velocity increased as the season progressed, including around 95 miles per hour over his last month of the season, which was really nice. The skills shot up. I think his swinging strike rate was over 13% over that last month. And I think the most important development for me is that he started throwing a curveball a lot more, and it was a nasty curveball. 42% O swing on his curveball, 81% in zone contact rate, and then a 17% swinging strike rate with about a 58% ground ball rate on that pitch. Good for a WRC plus of 68. So that was a pitch that he really didn't throw last year. He only threw 8 curveballs last year. And this year, he didn't throw it much for most of the season, but its usage really surged towards the end. And that's when he was most effective. So I'm going to be buying right back in on Musgrove this year. I have learned nothing. I am a masochist, and I'm all over Musgrove again.
Yeah, no, I like Musgrove as well. I don't think many love Musgrove. But I had him in a lot of places, and it was a painful go at times. Started out great. Rocky and the final month, like you said, he did show some serious signs of life. I didn't own him anywhere else, but for DFS wise, I was playing him off and on because he was cheap, and he did definitely look a lot better. He's going to reel us back in, like you said. So, and you'll probably get him really cheap, as you mentioned. So I don't hate that at all. The talent's there. It's just a matter of getting it figured out. Imagine if he was still in Houston. Just imagine what could be.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe the Pirates will trade him to the Indians this offseason, and they can create another bad fastball, awesome breaking off speed pitch stuff from that guy. Yeah. Who was your number two?
My number two was Zach Wheeler, and it wasn't so much that he had a bad season. It started off a little slow for Zach, but he finished very, very well. You know, with a 3.96 ERA, 4.06 xFIP, made 31 starts, pitched almost 200 innings. You know, similar strikeout rates to last year. When you look at the K percentage, about 24% K rate, 24% K rate last year. Walks are down almost 1.5%. Overall, pitched really, really well. Like I said, down the stretch, he was a big reason why the Mets all playoffs. But the reason I missed on Zach Wheeler, it was one of my bold predictions in the year. I had said Zach Wheeler would outpitch Walker Buehler. So, and I thought Walker Buehler was good, much better. So I was very, very keen on Zach Wheeler. I had him ranked very high. When you look at the player Raz Ball, he was the 54th best pitcher in baseball. Mike Fiers, John Means, Brandon Woodruff were guys that were right ahead of him. Your boy Hansel Robles was right ahead of him.
Hansel so hot right now.
As good as Wheeler was, from a fantasy perspective, he was not worth the value I had him at. So it wasn't as much, like I said, as Wheeler struggled. His pitch, like everything, if you look at his stats, very similar. His zone rates were very, very similar. He was a very good pitcher. A very good, if he was your third or fourth pitcher in a fantasy team, he was very good. I was drafting him like a number two. I also don't draft those do, so it's kind of a catch-22 there. So it was – Wheeler was good, just not as good as I wanted him to be. So no slight on Wheeler. I'll be back in on him next year. Curious to see where he's going to be playing baseball since he's a free agent. But I missed on the fact that I had him higher than he finished. I should have kept my expectations tempered, and I would have been very, very happy with him is where I'm going with that one.
Yeah. And
who's your number three?
Just quickly on Wheeler, he just needs that strikeout pitch. You know, he just doesn't have it. Like the highest swinging strike rate he has on any pitch is 12.5% for his changeup. They all have decent swinging strike rates when you combine them together, but just not there. I do think that if the ball changes next year, he could be a guy who takes another leap forward. Has never really given up a ton of home runs outside of 2017, which also had the juice ball. His home runs that he gave up jumped last year, but a lot of, improvements, especially in control this year. So maybe next year is the year you got to go back to that bold prediction and put it out there again.
I'll definitely be back on him next year. I just don't know if I can predict him to be better than Walker Buehler. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, that's a tough comp for sure.
Yeah.
So number three for me is Germán Márquez. I think heading into this year, I had Márquez as my number 14 starting pitcher, I want to say. And so, he just didn't perform well at all. And I think, Coors definitely remains undefeated. I wish I could provide some like super in-depth analysis of why he failed. Let's see. Yeah, I had him number 14 among my starting pitchers, right between Clevinger and Corbin. If you look at his skills, they were pretty similar to what he did last year. When you look at the swinging strike, CSW was down slightly, but still 30.5%, which is really solid, 32.1%. Last year, the swinging strike rate was up. His control metrics were solid. His walk rate was actually lower than last year. The K rate was also lower. And so I think a lot of it goes down to both, the impact of Coors. And I think the impact of Coors with the bouncy ball was just destruction for anybody who is pitching there. we saw how Walker Buehler did there, even you know, when he pitched. And so I think the major piece that I noticed just in diving deeper was last year he had two really good breaking pitches that he could rely on, the slider and the curveball. This year, the slider, it had pretty similar skills when you look at like kind of the underlying metrics of the slider, but it got crushed. It had a 122 WRC plus this year compared to a 17 WRC plus last year. And so, you know, where the true talent of that slider lies, I'm not really sure. I think I'm out on Marquez, generally speaking, like I am on most Coors pitchers. I mean, 6.26 ERA at Coors versus 3.67 on the road for him, a 1.5 home runs per nine this year. So I don't think, unless I'm fairly confident that the ball is going to be dejuiced again, that I will be in on him. I do think that if the ball is dejuiced, he could provide some value by being like around a 4 ERA and then like a decent enough whip, but getting you a bunch of Ks. So. Yeah. And I'm not sure whether you can hear my smallest child crying in the background or not. But that's happening right now.
It's okay. I thought it was just more Germán Marquez people. That's all I thought it was. It's no big deal. Cause you were not alone on that. There was a lot of Germán. It was either you're in or you're out. There was quite the back and forth on that one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It was, it was enjoyable to watch people going at each other for like the first month of the season. And then it was it was definitely a knockout for the anti-Marquez folks.
Yeah, I think, like you said, after the first month or so, I think that whole thing stopped. I think people realized they can't fight that battle anymore. It's just not going to happen. And it wasn't that they weren't like completely wrong because of his good numbers on the road. It was more where you had to draft him, you were just wasting like quality of pitcher because you couldn't use him every time. So it was just, that was the problem I always had. I wanted nothing to do with them. I've been burned on Rockies pitchers in the past. I think I'm just a scorned person that will probably never own a Rockies guy if I don't have to, type thing. So that's where that one lands. And Marquez is very good. If he ever leaves Colorado, he can call him.
Yeah, hop on board for sure.
Yeah. My number three.
Yeah.
This is one that I'll leave some crow on this one, is Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn is a guy, when the Rangers signed him, I laughed my rear end off. I thought Lance Lynn in Arlington in the heat of summer is a recipe for disaster. Boy, was I wrong. Somehow, some way, and I should have looked into it more. I've heard others talk about it. That is his second half, once, because we forgot he started the season late. Spring training was his real season. The whole stories that you want to build around, sure. But his second half after he got traded, he really pitched really, really well, and he carried it over into 2019. Pitching half your starts essentially at home, give or take, with a 3.67 ERA and a 3.85 xFIP when half your starts are in Arlington is impressive. What might be even more impressive is he gave up less than one home run per nine when you have half your games in Arlington with the bouncy ball. That is ridiculous. Like, tip of my cap to you. He had a career best 208 innings pitched. He was a workhorse. Lance Lynn, folks, had 16 wins. Lance Lynn, I didn't look it up in his draft spots, but just top of my head, easily in the 300s, I'd imagine, maybe late 200s. But I'd imagine easy 300s. That's why I didn't even look it up, because it was just that far gone. It wasn't even worth the time to make it work. But you look at it, he lowered his fastball by 6%, something we've been talking about. He increased his slider by almost 5%. His other off-speed pitches are pretty similar. But I think the use of that slider, keeping the ball in the ballpark that way, his strikeout rate went from 23% to 28% in 2019. His walk rate went from 11% to 6.5%. So his K to walk percentage, 21.4 compared to 12.1. That is elite type stuff. Like, it's really, really good. There's something to Lance Lynn. I don't know what it is. He was a 16th top pitcher on the player rater this year, which is outstanding. He's right next to guys like Josh Hader, Patrick Corbin, Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray is another one many of us got wrong. Yeah. But Lance Lynn, as the 16th best pitcher in baseball, basically free in drafts as one of those guys. He was actually a free agent in a lot of leagues, now that I think about it. He was on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues after draft day. So I was definitely wrong on Lance Lynn. I thought that was going to be a thing that blew up in your face. He's 32 years old. He'll be very interesting to see how things develop next year because he's going to be 33 in the new ballpark in Arlington, which we don't know how. We have no idea. It's him, so it shouldn't be as bad. But you never know. They leave the roof open, kind of like Arizona does at times. You have different deals to deal with, basically. It'll be interesting. But Lance Lynn, definitely a guy I wanted nothing to do with. I thought he was a crazy man's pick, and he turned out to be amazing. So Lance Lynn would be my third.
Definitely. Yeah, and just looking right now, I mean, that fastball was so dominant. 14.1% swinging strike rate on his four-seam fastball, which is elite. And then this is kind of interesting, just looking at his velo and how it's developed over the last 3 years. You know, he had Tommy John a number of years ago in 2016. Since then, his four-seam fastball averaged 92.5 miles per hour in 2017, 94 miles per hour in 2018, and then 95 miles per hour last year. So each year, like, a jump in velo. And I think that's something that you'll see across the board with a lot of guys who took that next step is like Giolito, Lynn, others, is that increase in velo. So definitely be looking for those spring training velo readings next year to see if you can identify some of these guys before it's too late.
Yeah. Jeff Zimmerman always comes out with that spring training list. He'll give a sheets or a doc he'll put out on Twitter, and he'll keep him updated the best he can. And, you know, it's a guy we talked about earlier. We can talk about him later or a different episode. You mentioned Joe Musgrove, Ronaldo Lopez. A lot of these guys just in the last month to 2 months of the season started increasing velocity and things changed. So there's definitely something to that increased fastball and then, you know, better slider curveball usage. That's people are starting to buy into pitch mix, which forever people didn't think was that important. And obviously they're figuring that out. So that's good to see.
Definitely.
Who's your number four?
Who's your number four?
The same as yours, Trevor Bauer.
They're the same guy. Trevor Bauer is my number four. I missed hardcore on Bauer. I had him as my number six starting pitcher. I owned him in a number of different leagues and he just didn't do well. I mean, when you look across the board at virtually all metrics, you know, he was either level or worse than last year. You know, he had major control issues, a 9% walk rate, which is worse than league average. And all of his pitches pretty much got worse. You know, he had a dominant slider, which had a 21.1% swinging strike rate last year. That dropped down to 18.2% this year. His cutter, which is like the Corey Kluber cutter, had a 22% swinging strike rate last year. That dropped all the way down to 14%. He worked on his changeup in the offseason. That was supposed to be like his new great pitch he debuted. That had a 15% swinging strike rate last year, down to a 12% this year. His fastball was better this year just in terms of swinging strike rate. So that helped negate some of the overall dip in swinging strike rate. But just a really disappointing performance from Bauer. And I think one of the things that I'm going to take away from this is that guys who don't have a history of having super low home run per nine are probably due some regression in a very bad way in subsequent years. I think this is actually one of the major takeaways that I'm having. So like last year, Bauer had a 0.46 home runs per nine. That's after never having a home run per nine lower than 0.94. In the majors, including 1.28 the year before and 1.44 this year. And so, you know, he had always been around or worse than league average when it came to home runs per nine. And then all of a sudden last year, he gave up like zero home runs. And, you know, what we've seen is, you know, the ball certainly had an impact, but I think he was also due just some overall regression in that home run per nine. We saw something similar with Aaron Nola, who had, I think, the lowest BABIP last year. And I think a lot of times we'll dive in and we'll say, oh, the skills or the expected batting average or the expected home runs or the expected slug say that they earn this. And it doesn't necessarily matter whether or not they earn it. It's just a matter of when something is unsustainably low, even the best players are going to regress from that point in time. And so I think steering clear of some of the guys who had, you know, super low BABIPs, as long as there are reasons, right? Like Justin Verlander has a low BABIP, but he gives up a ton of fly balls. So he gives up a ton of home runs. He's also strikes out like 35% of guys. So, you know, and that's not something that, that Bowers was coming even close to doing, or Bauer was coming even close. There's a Freudian slip for you talking about Bauer and Bowers. Jesus. A masochist again.
He's always on your brain.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his K rate was 27.8% this year. So still solid. He still gave you 250 strikeouts, 213 innings, but damn, those ratios really, really hurt you. So Bauer is a guy who, you know, I don't mind him as the price drops heading into drafts. I think he was around pick 100, or maybe it was in like the 70 to 80 range in my draft in First Pitch Arizona. It's not a terrible investment, especially if we think that the ball is going to be dejuiced for next year, maybe even expecting a little bit of positive regression for him. But, you know, definitely going to keep my eye on guys who just have super low BABIPs or super low home runs per nine and kind of steer clear of those guys unless I see some value outside of that. What did you notice about Bauer? Or what were some of the reasons you think you made a wrong turn on him?
One quick thing, on the two early mocks, he's going about pick 76 to 80-ish, give or take.
Okay.
So that's kind of skewed because, well, one guy took him at 57th and one league took him in an auto pick at 56. Most others went like 86 to 90. So, yeah, you'll get him somewhere around there. For me with Bauer is, yes, the home runs, you couldn't imagine they'll be that much low, but you got to also imagine maybe he goes from like 0.5 to 1 instead of 1.5 type thing. If there wasn't the bouncy ball, that could have had a huge factor. But you mentioned it, that the strikeout rate dropping a bit hurt quite a bit. He increased his walk rate. And then looking at his pitch mix, I believe you mentioned it also, stopping his – he basically used his curveball 7% less of the time. That seems like a dumb move. But Bauer knows better than anybody. He's creating pitches left and right. But lowering that curveball that much seems very, very silly for a guy that used his slider and his curveball so much. He developed a cutter that, according to Fangraphs, developed a cutter that he used a lot more, which doesn't seem very good because if it's not cutting properly, it's just a batting practice fastball. And that can get into a lot of trouble for you. So maybe that'll change. And one thing that gets me intrigued for the next season is, A, value-wise, going there at pitch 80 or so is interesting because he's going around guys like James Paxton, Jose Berrios, Chris Paddock, Corey Kluber even dropped that far down. It'd be interesting to see how that all plays out. But they did hire his driveline guy in Cincinnati. So he'll have his guy in his backyard to help him kind of pick his brain all the time and work with him. Working with Sonny Gray, he was already picking his brain in the last month or so, and you saw certain things change here and there. I think just kind of a new lease on life might help him because Bauer is a mental individual. Like he looks way deep into things. So I think having different guys to pick their brains and maybe show him what he was doing wrong, because he's at least the guy that he's proven he'll learn from. Like he'll let you teach him and learn things, and he's willing to change things, which is good. That's not what all these guys can do. So you nailed a bunch of the statistical parts of it. He still threw 213 innings. That's the most he's ever thrown in his career. He started out the season great with Cleveland, then just kind of fell off a cliff. So we got to hope things improve. CSW is still good for the most part. Like you said, most of his stuff was still good. He has found the plate a lot, found a lot of bats, and it's not a good recipe, especially now in Great American Small Park and with a potential bouncy ball. That doesn't work well, but he could definitely be one of those bounce-back guys. I'm afraid he's going to be a popular bounce-back for many, and that might ruin the value come draft day. That's a few months away, so we can figure that out then. But I'm with you. Trevor Bauer, big miss. I thought there was I think I had him top six or so going into the season, and that definitely did not play out as he was around 45 overall at the pitching and the player rater. but definitely would be back on them next year, as you were saying.
Yeah. And
all right.
To your point about Bauer and kind of Cincinnati and his impact on pitchers, and also with Kyle Bodie heading over there, I saw an article yesterday that Michael Lorenzen was saying that he's working with Bauer in the off season, and that you know, that he thinks he can add two ticks of velo heading into next year. So, well, you know, it remains to be seen whether he can do that. But, you know, that type of stuff, just having folks who understand, you know, pitch design and who understand mechanics so well is can never be a harmful thing for a pitching staff. So it'll be interesting to see how he rubs off on other players on that team, hopefully better than he rubbed off on himself.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the biggest thing is he needs to learn how to, I don't know the right way to say it, not be so much of a persona, I guess is the best way I can say it. Be a pitcher. Don't be a persona. Yeah. Figure that one out.
Yeah. Let your performance do some of the talking, right?
Yes, like, exactly.
When you, yeah. Yeah.
Well, because I like a lot of things about him. I like some of his spontaneity and spunkiness. Some of it's way too much. I like his little videos he does with other players around the league. That kind of stuff's fun. But there's other parts of him. It's like, yeah, you might want to tone it. Maybe stay off Twitter tonight type thing. That might be good for you. All right. Who's your number five? Oh, wait. We share this one too.
Oh, man. Bubba, we are – this just highlights how brilliant we are.
Yes.
We are so good at getting the same things wrong.
And this one, I promise this has nothing to do with me being a Giants fan.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Right. I believe you. I believe you for sure. No, I mean, I was off of Clayton Kershaw this year. I did not, or Clayton Kershaw is the number five guy that I definitely missed on. I was just not in on him. Like, I thought the price was too high. Like, even in when he was going around pick 70 there for a little while, I was not into what I was seeing from him. But, you know, like with a guy who has generational talent like he does, like, I guess you just have to assume that he'll find a way. You know, the velo was the major concern. The velo didn't improve at all. It was 90.4 this year on average, down from 91.4 on average last year, but he found a way to make it work. He actually threw the four-seam fastball more, even though it wasn't as effective of a pitch, but his slider was better. The slider's swinging strike rate jumped 6% from 13.9% last year to 19.9% this year. And that pitch also, the chase rate on it increased by 10% as well. So it was a very strong pitch for him in a number of ways, because he could get it over the plate, he could throw it for strikes, and also get whiffs on that. His curveball was pretty much the same. And he did throw a changeup he only threw 16 changeups. So really it was that four-seam fastball, the slider, and the curveball. The curveball and the slider both generated a lot of ground balls, well over 50%, both at or above 55%. So, you know, he found a way to pitch. He found a way to be effective, and he plays for the Dodgers. And so I think for that reason, like, you can't really, you know, there's definitely some value there. He did have a pretty low BABIP, but it seems like just looking at some of the expected metrics that some of that was in line for, that it was quote unquote deserved. You might expect some regression, even though he's been around there recently, just because he is not as good. The 84% left on base percentage also seems a little high for a guy who's not striking out a ton of hitters. But, you know, 21% K minus walk, 13% swinging strike rate. I mean, all in all, it looks pretty good. There was a pretty sizable gap between his ERA and his FIP and XFIP and Sierra. Although there's about a 30% career gap, it was 83 points this year. So I would expect some regression next year, maybe into the, like, you know, low, like the 325, 350 range in ERA. But If they deaden the ball again, then that home run per nine is going to go down from 1.41. So, you know, again, he continues to be a solid pitcher. I think he's probably worth grabbing in that, you know, like fourth, fifth round range in 15 team drafts next year. He'll probably go in, I think, the third round when it comes to it, just because pitching in general is going to get pushed up. But, you know, Clayton, I was wrong about you this year, and I apologize. His CSW jumped about 3% from last year, 30.1% this year, compared to 28.4% last year. So a lot of positive signs. He's a great pitcher. He knows how to pitch. And as long as he doesn't have to pitch in the playoffs against really good competition every single game, he's doing all right. How about you? What did you think about the miss on Kershaw?
I like that last little part there about the playoffs. It's always good. yeah, I missed it. And it wasn't that I don't think he's a great pitcher. I've talked about it on other shows I've been on, that as much as I'm a Giants fan and don't like the Dodgers, I respect the heck out of Clayton Kershaw because he is one of the best pitchers of our generation. Like, there's no hiding that. He is that good. I was terrified for his back injury. For someone that struggles with back injuries from time to time, I know how those can linger, how they can pop up out of nowhere. That's going to affect an athlete. It's common sense. And no, I'm not speaking, you know, some foreign language here. It terrified me. And I know I wasn't the only one terrified on that. And it just kind of turned me off on him, where he was going in drafts compared to other pitchers around him. I'd rather take the healthy guy than the guy with back problems. That was me. Obviously, it backfired. He didn't have any flare-ups this year, pitched more innings this year than he has in the last 2 years. He was great. You mentioned the increased strikeouts, the pitch mix changes. He threw his fastball more this year, which is kind of surprising. He's a smart guy who learned how to pitch. Not surprised by that at all. He definitely did it. Mad Bum did it. There's guys I claimed all offseason like that would argue Mad Bum with me. I said, yes, his stuff might not be there, but he'll learn how to pitch. He's that kind of guy, and he did just that. Kershaw can obviously do that. Kershaw's great at that. As long as Kershaw's back is fine, I think he can be phenomenal again next year. I'll definitely be more interested in him this next year. In the two early mocks, he's going around pick 38. A few picks before him was Nola and Clevenger. Behind him was Snell, Flaherty, Strasburg, Sale. That's a heck of a group. That's a really, really good group of starting pitchers with some bats sprinkled in there, that when you have Kershaw, it's like, okay, I'd probably take Clevenger over him. Nola Kershaw's kind of an interesting conundrum. Flaherty, Strasburg, yeah, I almost lean those. It's just when you get to this port, it's like grasping at straws. You can probably find a few stats, more personal preference type things. But Kershaw's great. You mentioned playing on the Dodgers. They're going to be very good again. He's going to have another great season. If he give you 170 pitches or innings, I mean, that's probably going to be 170 really good innings. So I'm not going to talk negative on him. I just completely missed on the fact I didn't think he'd be healthy. I thought he'd be their Rich Hill this year, but hey, they still had Rich Hill, who did Rich Hill things. So I guess you can't have two of them on one roster. So yeah, I missed it big time on him. He dominated. Last piece on him, if you look at the Razzball Player Rater, I had it just pulled up. Where did it? Oh, yeah, I can't even read. He was the 10th best pitcher, right behind Hyunjin Ryu, right before Max Scherzer. He was a better than Max Scherzer when it comes to 15 teams leagues on the Player Rater. He was worth $20, $20.1. Scherzer was 19.8. Buehler was 19.3. The Dodgers had three of the top 12. That's pretty good. But yeah, Kershaw was great. I'm just blabbering now because I just realized he was very, very good.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about Kershaw, and I think one of the reasons why I'll probably steer clear of him again, because I have not learned anything. I have learned zero lessons in my life. Is just like, even though he was relatively healthy all year, like the strikeouts over the last 4 years, like the total strikeouts, 172, 202, 155, and even this year, 189. So while, like, you know, he was great this year because he brought you tremendous value, those strikeouts, if you're getting him in the third round, you know, that's going to be a much lower strikeout total than some of the other guys if you have to reach and get him there. I think we're going to get, and I think it'd be really hard to project him for more than, you know, the 190 strikeouts that he got last year. With the way strikeouts are going now and volume and strikeouts being so critical, I think that might be one knock against him moving forward. Outside of some of the other things that we mentioned, is just like, you know, if he's your, if he's your, if you're drafting him as your ace, or you're drafting him as, you know, I guess he's an okay number two, but if you're drafting him as your ace in the third round, I think that's going to be a little bit problematic from a strikeout perspective.
No, and I'm 100% with you. That's why I'd probably go Flaherty and Strasburg over him. Mm-hmm. Clevenger, I go, because it's also a combination of youth and just kind of different. Some of it's just, like I said, you're just kind of picking age versus this or strikeouts versus this. And I wouldn't be shocked if they're going to be very close possibly by season's end. But like with Clevenger, I think there's a whole other level we haven't seen yet. Flaherty, same thing. Strasburg was just great, and you are playing with fire with him. But I think there's a lot to like there. It's just different little things like that. And with Kershaw, eventually age will catch up to him. The strikeouts are a concern. You can't keep throwing fastballs that are hittable, because there were certain games last year you'd see him, and he would play with fire kind of like he was in some of these postseason games. They finally caught up to him in game five, but even in his start, I think in game two against the Nats, I know we're not, you know, we're not worried about postseason and fantasy, but that game was a demonstration of other games I witnessed him pitch throughout the year where they were hitting the ball extremely hard, and they only got like two runs on him, where it could have easily been a six run spot through four innings, and boom, there goes your ratios. Like it was a rocky road at times, but he was a smart pitcher, like we talked about. He could wiggle in and out of it a little more effectively, which comes with age. But I like these young kids where I know they're bulldogs. Like Flaherty, watching what he's like, he had a rough night in NLCS game three. He had a rough night, but just watching his tenacity in that division series, the stuff he has, the kind of bulldog mentality, that goes a long ways throughout a long baseball season. So little things like that, things that don't show up in the stat sheets. That's why I think our podcast is fun, because you can go deep in the stats. I kind of watch and go feel and stuff like that and kind of mix it all together. It's fun.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I'm looking at now at the too early mock draft ADP. Kershaw is the ninth pitcher off the board. That ADP of 39. I just think that's a dangerous. You're in a 15-team league, and Kershaw is your ace.
Yep.
I think you're going to have a lot of strikeout problems. Like you mentioned, like pretty much everybody who's behind him, like Snell, I'd rather have. Flaherty, I'd rather have. Strasburg, I'd rather have. Sale, I'd rather have.
Sale's the question mark for me. Like, do you trust Sale in his health right now?
Well, I think that there's a you know, it'll be an interesting risk analysis. I mean, you know, right now we don't know anything. If he theoretically, if he's healthy, then he's throwing in spring training. And, you know, even this year, you know, this year he sucked, right? And I could have easily put him in this category because I drafted him with the fifth overall pick. But, you know, so he could have easily been there. But like you look at him, he had 218 strikeouts in less than 150 innings, you know, 13.3 Ks per nine, a 29.6 K minus walk rate. Like all the skills are off the charts. You know, what's different is a 1.47 home runs per nine, a 66.7% strand rate, which is 11% lower than his career average, 309 BABIP, which is 16 points higher than his career average. So a lot of these issues are a result of both the ball and I think a little bit of bad luck. And I think this is the worst that we're going to see from Sale. And so if there's any inclination that he is healthy, I mean, I was talking to a bunch of people about this weekend, but like if you draft Chris Sale at pick 45, like at the end of the third round, start of the fourth round, and he is healthy, like that goes a long way to helping you win your league. And so if there's any semblance of health and that ADP is sticking around there, well, I may just be willing to grab him as my SP2. If I can get like a really strong guy there up at the top. So
I'm with you on that. I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, and like Castillo's, I'd take over him. I'd probably take Corbin over him. Giolito, I'd definitely take over him. You know, Ohtani, Syndergaard, probably not, but maybe Charlie Morton. I mean, Charlie Morton's been really good for a long time, and maybe even Greinke. I mean, Greinke's going to be on the Astros. He throws innings. Like he doesn't get K's, but neither is Kershaw. So I just think like from a value standpoint, Kershaw is not, he's going to be like one of the worst value propositions, I think, heading into,
I bet when we have this conversation in about two, three months from now, maybe January, that, when we see some good NFBC data start to collect, I bet you a lot of these names are in front of Kershaw. I bet you, because that's one thing about these two early mocks. They're great to get a kind of feel for things. There's so much recency bias. And I think a lot of people were similar to us that thought Kershaw coming into the season was going to be this one pitcher, and he just outperformed all of our expectations. We might have been lower than some other people, but there were not many that thought Kershaw was going to be this good. Like, you probably thought he'd be good, but not this good. So I think, could be totally wrong, that there were some drafts. Because you look at, there were six drafts. Most of them went anywhere from 33 to 38. One draft, he went 55th. So one draft had him drop quite a bit. Yeah. I'd love to, well, we will be able to. It'll be fun to see where Kershaw actually ends up later in the draft season.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's gonna.
That'll wrap us up this week.
Yeah. Oh, so. And I do. We did talk a little earlier, but just honorable mentions for blown calls. We were both off on Reynaldo Lopez for sure. We didn't include him because he was just, you know, where he was going in ADP. I think he was around pick 250 or so. So. But he was awful this year outside of like two stars.
Yeah.
And then Matt Harvey and Jose Ureña were guys who were very late ADPs who I definitely, you know, was in on and missed on a lot of them. Are there any guys that you would add to that in terms of honorable mentions? We won't dive deep on them at all.
Yeah. Ronaldo Lopez for sure. Mike Minor. That's something with the Texas Rangers. I just don't trust that's Coors Light South. I'm not that one scares me, so I was definitely off on that. And then other than that, without getting like super picky, it's tough, like, you know, Kluber, but then he got hurt. Like, you can't predict that. Guys that just didn't perform what you expect, I don't really have too many that stand out without going super deep in ADP and stuff. And then you're just kind of grasping at straws, like you said. Like, maybe Masahiro Tanaka. I'm not like huge on him, but I thought he'd be better than he was. It was kind of quiet and not pretty, but nothing too crazy. I actually, knock on wood, my pitching wasn't my problem this year. It was more the batters that got me good. But luckily, when it comes to waiver wires, you can find kind of sneaky guys here and there all over the place. So it worked out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the great thing is, Bubba, I fully expect you to adopt the two starting pitchers in the first two round approach. And so your hitting will be great. Or your pitching will be great again heading into 2020.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be as into it as you are, but but I'll tell you this much. I did it some this last year, and in all the mocks I've done so far, I've done two mocks. I've taken at least two in the first four rounds, and I've been very happy with it.
Yeah.
And usually it depends on where I'm drafting, but the two that I get out of the first four rounds, knock on wood, so far I've been very good. And if I can pull that off, I'll be happy. That's kind of what I did last year. I ended up getting two what I thought were aces to near aces, and it gives me the luxury of kind of bobbing and weaving more and getting bats and kind of waiting on that glob of pitchers in the middle. So we'll see, but there'll be a lot to break down on that as we get closer to draft season.
Definitely.
All right, that'll wrap us up for Bubba and the Bat Flip 11. Toby's back from Arizona. We'll be back again next Monday. Lots of fun stuff coming up this week around baseball. Enjoy the playoffs. Any thoughts on the playoffs?
No. I mean, I'm just hoping, no offense to all the Yankees fans out there. I still hold a little bit of my anti-Yankee bias from my days as a Red Sox fan. So, and growing up in a Red Sox household. So I'm rooting against the Yankees, rooting against the Cardinals. Rooting for the Nationals, rooting for the Astros. I think it'd be nice if the Nationals won. There's just a lot of players on that roster that I really enjoy. But so I'd say Nationals number one, Astros number two. I just like a lot of the guys on their team, and then I think Cardinals and Yankees for me. Looking like the Nats are going to go to the World Series. So happy for Scherzer and Strasburg and all those guys. I think they really deserve it, and I love Anthony Rendon and Lil Rendon. How about you?
What are
you?
Lil Rendon. Yeah.
I and love Zimmerman. That. Man, I want a jersey that says Lil Rendon because I'd wear it.
That'd be perfect for you. That would be perfect. Zimmerman, the lifelong Nat, would be fun to see him get there too. The Nats Astros. That's what I'm pulling for. After that point, like, I like the Astros to win, but if it's the Nats, it wouldn't break my heart because the storyline of the first season without Bryce Harper winning the World Series, would get all the clicks in the world. That would be amazing footage right there. But it's been good. It's been good. This Yankees-Astros series is going to be – it's already been good. It's going to get real good. Yeah. Garrett Cole, Game 3 in the Bronx. Cannot wait for that. But, all right, we'll wrap it up there. We'll call it a day. We'll be back with you guys next week with Episode 12. But for now, find Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric. Bubba the BatFlip, Episode 11 in the books. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.